Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Atlanta and the 2015 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please welcome the chair of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous serving the U.S. and Canada, Terry Bedient.
In AA's big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, we read, in spite of the great increase in the size and span of the fellowship, at its core, it remains simple and personal. Every day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. At the time this was written, our founders could not have imagined that in the not-too-distant future, the lives of millions of alcoholics around the world would be touched by another alcoholic sharing AA's message of strength and hope. And they could not have imagined that 56,000 sober alcoholics would be here tonight in Atlanta to celebrate the 80th anniversary. I'm a non-alcoholic friend of AA and chair of the General Service Board, and on behalf of the board, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome you to the 2015 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Over the weekend, we will celebrate the Fellowship of the Spirit and the 80th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous with the theme, 80 years, happy, joyous, and free, and it will indeed be a celebration. Today, Alcoholics Anonymous has a presence in over 170 countries. The Big Book has been translated into 69 languages, including, most recently, Twi for Ghana. Other AA writings are shared in 76 languages, reaching alcoholics on 7 continents. The AA message continues to cross boundaries of race, culture, and religion. And the diversity of experience is rich and extraordinary in AA, for it is open to all who stumble in with the desperation of alcoholism. As we celebrate 80 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, let us think about the fellowship and its legacies of recovery, unity, and service. Let us remember the sacrifices our founders made to pass along the AA message. Let us remember the sacrifices made every day around the world by alcoholics like you, reaching out to other alcoholics to offer a solution. And let us appreciate that AA has helped all of us, member and member alike, become richer in spirit and in soul. As we continue in unity to share the AA message, may the spirit of love and service continue to thrive for another 80 years and beyond. And so, my fellow friends of Bill W., have an amazing convention. Thank you.
And now, the 2015 International Convention opening flag ceremony, featuring 94 flags from around the world. Each flag is carried by a member who has traveled from the AA community in that land to be here with us tonight. To lead off our opening ceremony, an Eagle staff carried by an AA member of the First Nation Native Americans. Antigua and Barbuda. Argentina. Australia. Austria. Bahamas. Bangladesh. Barbados. Belarus. Belgium. Belize. Bermuda. Bolivia. Botswana. Brazil. Cayman Islands. Chile. People's Republic of China. Colombia. Costa Rica. Croatia. Cuba. Czech Republic. Denmark. Dominican Republic. Ecuador. Egypt. El Salvador. Estonia. Fiji. Finland. France. Germany. Ghana. Gibraltar. Guatemala. Guernsey. Honduras. Hong Kong. Hungary. India. Indonesia. Ireland. Israel. Italy. Jamaica. Japan. Jersey. Kuwait. Latvia. Lithuania. Luxembourg. Malaysia. Maldives. Malta. Mexico. Mongolia. Netherlands. New Zealand. Nicaragua. Norway. Oman. Panama. Philippines. Poland. Portugal. Puerto Rico. Cutter. Russia. Saint Martin. Scotland. Singapore. Slovakia. Slovenia. South Africa. South Korea. Spain. Sweden. Switzerland. Thailand. Trinidad and Tobago. Turkey. Uganda. Ukraine. United Arab Emirates. United Kingdom. Uruguay. Canada. United States of America.
an old sweet song keeps Georgia, Georgia on my mind. Oh yeah. Other arms reach out to me, baby. Other eyes smile tenderly. Yeah, in peaceful dreams I feel the road leads back home, back to you, Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. Yeah, what peace ever I find. Just an old, old sweet song keeps Georgia.
ladies and gentlemen, to chair the opening meeting of our 2015 International Convention, please welcome Southeast Regional Trustee, Chet.
Wow. Good evening. My name is Chet, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the 80th anniversary celebration of Alcoholics Anonymous and our 14th International Convention. On this very special evening, let us first reflect for a moment on the great debt we owe to those who went before us. Among them, our beloved co-founders, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And we remember Ebby T., who first carried a message of hope to Bill. We recall the early friends of AA, people like Henrietta Seiberling, who was a key link in the meeting of Bill and Dr. Bob. And we think of Clarice and T. Henry Williams, who opened up their homes to our meetings. We acknowledge with gratitude the Reverend Sam Shoemaker, whose activities in the Oxford Group did so much to influence Bill and the development of our program of recovery. We bear in mind our non-alcoholic friends in various professions. With their help over the years, we have been able to reach many suffering alcoholics around the world who might not otherwise have found sobriety through our AA program of recovery. And let us not forget to extend our grateful thanks to the wonderful Al-Anons, Alateens, and other friends of AA here tonight. And around the world who helped and continue to help make possible our new lives. We are most grateful. It is now my privilege to welcome back the current chair of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous, a wonderful friend of AA, Terry Bedian.
Thank you, Chet. We know AA cannot survive without service. Here tonight are many servants of AA. Please help me welcome on stage the trusted servants of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. These men and women, AA members and non-members alike, serve the fellowship of AA in the U.S. and Canada, overseeing our vital world services,
and the Grapevine office. We are grateful also for the dedication of those non-alcoholics who have served on the chair of the board before me. Here with this evening are Ward Ewing, Gary Glenn, and Leonard Blumenthal. Jim Estelle and Elaine McDowell send their best wishes. General service is one of the ways our members serve the fellowship. With us here tonight are many others who have served the general service structure, past and current delegates, past trustees, AA World Service and Grapevine directors, general service office staff, area and district servants, and those most vital links, our treasured general service representatives. Let us recognize the sacrifices of time and effort that our volunteers on the local host committee have done here in Atlanta. Let us think also of members around the world who might have liked to have been here, but were not able to join us tonight. For that and many other things, let us give all of them a great big thank you and a big hand. And now again, here is Chet to chair our three-speaker AA meeting this evening. Chet?
And now, for our AA meeting, let us begin with a moment of silence for the still suffering alcoholic. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio tapes and in published or broadcast reports of our meetings, including those reports on the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. out of respect for others, please do not take photographs or videos during any of the meetings at the International Convention. Also, be considerate when taking photographs around the convention venues. Take care that you do not capture images of AA members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your pictures. Even if you have permission to take photos or videos, our traditions guide us not to post any content that identifies AA members as such on websites accessible to the public or to share it on publicly accessible social media or social networking platforms, apps, or websites. Tonight, we have a three-speaker meeting. And to start us off, Stephanie N. from New York.
I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Stephanie. I'd like to thank my higher power, whom I choose to call God, for his grace and his mercy in my life. I'd like to welcome anybody newer than myself. I'd like to welcome those coming back. And I'd like to thank the old-timers for keeping the doors open for an alcoholic like me. I feel like, you know, when I was getting ready to go in and sneak and try to get some alcohol and you know, I get that headache and I feel like my bowels is getting ready to break and I was trying to duck and dodge in and out of corners and stuff thinking that nobody could see me. I'm grateful. I am so grateful. I'm honored and I'm humbled. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born and raised my sober date is April 5th, 1990. And my home group is the Spring Creek Group of Brooklyn, New York, and we meet every Friday. We meet every Friday for a step meeting, and it's a wonderful meeting. I always say if you're in a step meeting on a Friday night, and we don't end until everybody in the room has an opportunity to share. So sometimes we're there till 10 o'clock, and sometimes we're there till 11:30. And it's a powerful, powerful thing. I ask God to use me today to carry his message, not Stephanie's message, but his hope of recovery, that I may help somebody. I grew up the oldest of five, what I would say a poor black girl from Bedford-Stuyvesant. I grew up in a house that was absolutely insane. My dad is one of us, and when he passed away, he was sober. But he didn't come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because he said what my grandmother said, that he could not talk to you. We were told that you are not supposed to tell anybody your business. What goes on in this house stays in this house. My house was crazy. Long before I ever picked up my drink, my first drink, I lived in a world of fear, violence, whether it was physical or emotional. I also lived in a world of, as you can see, I'm a light-skinned, green-eyed black woman who was raised in the 60s and the 70s, and You know, I was raised in an era of say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. But I was also from that place where I was too light to be black and too dark to be white. And people let me know that, aside from the voices in my own head. So I was never comfortable in my own skin. And most of the people in my house look like me. But in my arrogance and in my self of entitlement, they didn't make a difference. What they said about me wasn't important. It was what everybody else said about me outside. And so I remember being in elementary school and being afraid to go out the front door because I didn't know what the day was going to bring, what the world was going to bring. And whatever you said about me at that moment, that's what I was. If you said you liked me, wonderful. If you said you didn't like me, I had to try to make you like me. And this was long before I ever picked up a drink. I've been told by my family that whenever I couldn't get my own way, I would have temper tantrums and throw myself on the floor and bite and kick and scream. And I've done that sober as well. Go figure. But I picked up my first drink at a house party. I lied and manipulated my parents into letting me go out. And I went to this house party. And again, from the 60s and 70s, and we had house parties where we had strobe lights and blue lights where if you had lint on your clothes, it reflected everything that you had on. And, you know, I picked up my first drink, which was rum and coke. And I can remember standing here just like it was yesterday what happened to me when I picked up that drink. It went down, and I instantly became comfortable with myself. And I asked the boy to dance. And it was absolutely wonderful. I was comfortable in my own skin, and once I was comfortable in my own skin with me, I could be comfortable with you. And I put down that drink when I was about 13 and 14, and I did not pick up another drink until I was 17 years old. They told me I got 20 minutes, so you have to fill in the blanks. But when I was 17 years old, I got a job working for the City of New York under Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority in the office underneath the Triborough Bridge. And it was there that I gravitated toward the guys in the garage and where I learned how to drink what I thought was like a lady. And I learned that you had to carry a paper bag with you on the subway so that when the A train or the C train moved, and I hadn't eaten anything, I'm drinking all day long, when the train moved and I began to get sick, you know, I had to have a paper bag or a plastic bag so that I could throw up in this bag and I wouldn't mess up my clothes. My life was always filled with image. My life was always filled with, it was most important for me to please you. What you thought about me was the prominent thought in my mind. You know, I could not go home. I could not walk from the train station with stuff all over me because ladies didn't do that. Ladies drank out of cups, which I eventually did working for the City of New York. I learned how to drink on the job out of coffee mugs. So if you live in New York City and you did not get the services that you were entitled to, it's probably because I was drunk. Yes. During the course of all of this, I had a son and I had a daughter, and I was with this man, and we were living the Cliff and the Claire Huxtable life. I had a job, and he had a job, and we had furniture and a big old color TV, and we were drinking, come home from work and have a bottle of wine and do other things, and, you know, life was good. And, you know, then other substances came into play, and stuff began to leave the house, and he began to leave the house, and I woke up one day and it was me and these two little kids. And by this time in my life, I was about 26 years old, and by this time in my life, I didn't know how to do anything except to drink. I got a job working for the New York City shelter system, and before my drinking career was over, you could not tell me from one of the clients in the shelter. I stole everything that wasn't nailed down. I sold everything that wasn't nailed down. At the end of my drinking, my house looked like the shelter. I had maggots. I had parasites climbing all over, crawling all over my body. And my higher power saw fit, has a sense of humor. He saw fit to put, they transferred me, and he put this woman who sat right next to me, and she was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she began to leave these things y'all call pamphlets on my desk when she would go to lunch. And I was going AWOL, and I was missing in action, and I was lying, and I was manipulating, and she'd leave these pamphlets on my desk. And she would go to lunch, and she would come back different. And in New York City, we have lunchtime meetings. And one day, I just asked her, after having had, I don't know how many absences, and coming out the bathroom with my skirt in the back of my pantyhose, and all kind of stuff, could I go to a meeting with her? And she said yes. And that was in June of 1988, and I wish I could tell you that that was the end for me. Now, I asked my higher power to please give me a message of hope and recovery to share with somebody who was in this room. And what I want to say to you today is, if you're here and you want to drink, please tell somebody. I thought that if I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I wanted to drink, that that made me less of an alcoholic, or that made me a bad alcoholic in recovery, because I didn't know that active alcoholics were supposed to think about drinking. I didn't know that. So my journey in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I began to make meetings every day, and I drank every day. And this is a progressive disease, and my recovery was progressive as well. I made those meetings, and you people wanted to talk to me, and you wanted to walk me home, and I had to lie, and I had to duck, because, you know, you wanted to be my friend, and you couldn't be my friend because I had to go home and I had to drink after the meeting. And I was sitting in a meeting one day, and I'm talking really fast because I have a clock down here, and it's just ticking away. And I need to bring the message of hope, and I need to bring the message of recovery. So I made meetings for 18 months, and old-timers said things like, you know, keep coming no matter what. They said things like, bring the body and the mind will follow. They said things like, you don't have to live the way you were living. And, you know, I used to think that sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, making step meetings, making big book meetings, open meetings, hearing speaker meetings, I used to think, you know, that payday was my problem. If I could just figure out how not to do, you know, drink. I used to have to think about doing all the things that I said on my list. I don't know if anybody in here ever made a list, you know, like the Monday before payday, and you were going to pay back everybody that you borrowed from, and you were going to buy the kids this, and you were going to take care of all of that stuff. Well, by the time my mind finished racing on Friday when I got paid, I needed to drink to calm myself down. And if I could just have one drink while I'm running to the check cashing place, and I have to get back to work before lunchtime is over, and I have to have a mint in my mouth so that they don't smell the fact that I'm drinking, I could get this together, and this is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my higher power, in his grace and his infinite mercy, heard my cry of desperation. And although I could not put down the drink, bring the body and the mind will follow. Bring the body and mind will follow. If your behind falls off, bring it to a meeting. So I was at the beginners meeting at Stuyvesant Group on Friday night, and in the beginners meeting, they said there are no stupid questions in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I raised my hand and I said, could you tell me how to get home with my paycheck? I can't seem to figure this out. This is after making meetings for 18 months. I can't seem to figure this out. And that was on a Friday night, and then on Sunday, I was sitting in the big book meeting at our father's house, and something that I heard a million times, that I had an allergy. It's in the big book, that I have an allergy. and that there was absolutely, positively nothing I could do to stop myself from taking the next drink once I picked up the first one. Now, I had tried a lot of controlled drinking in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that wasn't the end. I got my income tax check, and I had a bright idea. You know, I need to go to this check cashing place, check cash this check, and in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm doing all of this. This is not, you know, trying to get there. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, making meetings every day. My last drink, I was sitting in my living room asking God to kill me. They told me that I was an alcoholic. The most natural thing for me was to think about drinking. And I had to allow people in my life to teach me how not to act upon my thoughts. That entire time that I had been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that whole 18 months, I hadn't told anybody anything about me. I would just show up. When I got sober, I didn't think that people knew that I had been drinking all that time. And they just said, keep coming. We knew. We knew, yeah, we didn't have to say anything. You know, we knew, but you just kept coming. And by God's grace and mercy, I was able to put down a drink. And I'm, you know, it amazes me that I say God's grace and that God, period, because, you know, when I came in here, I didn't think that God could possibly do. I thought that I was such a horrible person that God could not possibly do for me what he was doing for you. Today, I could not live without the concept or the internal being of a higher power in my life. And you know, I just want to kind of say, you know, that's what it was like. That's what it was like. That's what happened and what it's like now. What it's like now is beyond my wildest dreams. The other thing they told me was don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. And I'm here to tell you that don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle applies to a lot of stuff. That applies to all the stuff that I think is never going to work, all the crisis situations that I have to go through, all the agonizing moments and all the heartbreak. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle has kept me sober many a day, many a day. I was in this program and I did, you know, everybody was going back to school. I didn't want to go back to school. What the hell are you talking about? I don't want to go back to school. I'm not going back to school. School's not for me. And my higher power saw fit that I should go back to school and get a master's degree in this program. And I'm grateful. Those two little kids that I had that I thought that, you know, those two little kids that I thought that I had never abused, you know, because the welfare system had not come into my life and I had an apartment and I had a job. You know, the women in here had to tell me that, you know, when you hold your children up against the wall, when you have a hangover and they're not moving fast enough and, you know, you're calling them all kind of names, that's abuse. Well, those two children are now 35 and 33, and I have 7 granddaughters, and my granddaughters have never seen me drunk. I was sitting at my desk one day about 4 years ago, and my daughter called me up, and one of my granddaughters was sick, and I'm here to tell you that she said that the system was going to take my granddaughter, and I said, I'll take her. My husband and I, who's out there somewhere, I love you, Martin. She said, you know, they're gonna take her. And my husband and I took my 2 grandchildren, and they were 2.5 months old and 9 years old. And here, you know, we had just got the kids out the house. And so here go me and my husband, you know, and I was pissed off. I was angry. Because now you changed my whole life. You know, but this God in my understanding and a woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous told me, she said, if God didn't trust you with those kids, he wouldn't have put you in their life. He wouldn't have put them in your life. In September, they went home. My husband had some diagnosis of some illnesses, and you know, we're not drinking. I'm not drinking. We're making meetings. We're talking about how we feel. When they called me up and asked me to speak in this meeting, I was at my desk at work. Oh, yeah, I just got a promotion on my job. I'm like one of the get a load of this. I'm like the labor relations, deputy director of labor relations for one of the biggest agencies in New York City. And that means you got to talk to people and get along with people. And, you know, I'd be looking at them like they're crazy. You know, I'm in a union meeting and, you know, and I'd be like, in my mind, in my head, come on, let's fight. You know, let's go ahead, tell them. You know, I haven't had some good action in a long time. Let's go. Y'all don't know who you're messing with. And I'm friends with both the union and I'm friends with labor, so, you know, I could start some stuff, you know. I could start some he said, she said stuff in the labor management meeting, and oh, boy, and then just sit back and, you know, like that. But I'm sober and I'm grateful. And when they called me and asked me would I speak, I was sitting at work and I had to go underneath my desk. You know, I had to holler. So, you know, now I got 56 minutes and I'm going to 56 seconds and I'm going to tell you if you're new to myself, stay. Stay. Don't keep coming. Stay. Stay. If you're here, you know, you can't go through this program by yourself. You can't go through this process by yourself. This is wonderful. You know, we have a fellowship of men and women, but we also have a program in the first 164 pages of the big book. We have the steps. We have sponsees. You know, you have to reach out and you have to help somebody. I have an awesome group of people in my life. An awesome group of people have watched me grow up, you know, and who are helping me guide other people to grow up. You know, the one thing that I always wanted to be was a lady, you know, and because of this fellowship, because of this program, you know, I could clearly say that, truly say that I'm honored and I'm humbled because I'm on my way to being a woman of grace and dignity in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Stephanie. Our next speaker from California is Michael B.
Hello, my name is Michael B., and I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a liar, a slut, a thief, and anything else you might be thinking about, probably that also. I'm also addicted to what? Excuses. Right? Excuse number 54, I'm deaf. Excuse number 76, I'm gay. Excuse number 155, I'm Jewish. My favorite, I'm deaf and I'm Jew and I'm gay. That's my favorite excuse. I'm here because I'm gay. I'm here because I'm Jewish. I'm here because I'm deaf, you think? Nope, I'm not. I'm here because I'm an alcoholic. Is my alcoholism a sickness? Yes. I can't be deaf and Jewish, right? What I can say to my alcoholism that makes being deaf and Jewish makes my alcoholism more interesting. I guess I can tell you in general what it's like today. I am from LA, Los Angeles. I grew up there. Right on. Like I said, I'm from LA, and that's where my drinking began. My friend had a junior high school party at his house, hosted at his parents' house. And their parents had some alcohol in a secret room. So the three of us went and grabbed a hold of a bottle. And we drank something, and I can't remember what it was. I remember the color was gold, and it tasted horrible. I didn't like how it hit my stomach either. But what was important about that event was the 3 seconds of warm, comfortable feeling that I had. And I have been chasing those 3 seconds since then. Obviously, I failed. Thank God. My drinking became more regular. It started out at once in a while, moved into every weekend, then it became weekly. And then when I got into college, I was introduced to drugs also. And that's another part of my story, a big part of my story. If it weren't for drugs, I'd go to alcohol. If there were no alcohol, I'd go to drugs. And it was terrible. They both helped me survive through college, actually. If it wasn't for the two of those things, then I don't know where I would be. So I graduated from college. Now what? Drink more? You bet. One little problem. Money. I needed some money. If I wanted to drink right, I needed some money. To live, I need to eat. My mom gave me a name of a person who said that they would get in touch with you and she may have a job for you. And I said, sure, why not? She was a relation, she worked at a school or a coordinator for the deaf program at the school and the special ed program. So I called her. Oh, well, let me back up. I woke up one morning. I decided to take a hit of marijuana, hit a pot. So I called her. And she said, hello, my name is Mel. And, I said, hello, my name is Michael. I heard you may have a job for me. And she put me off. And then she said, okay, what was your name again? And I gave her my name. My name's Michael. Oh, you're the one. Oh, I've known you since you were two. Oh, my stars. Yeah, let's set up an appointment. Can you show up at this address tomorrow at 2? I said, sure. I'll see you tomorrow at 2. I showed up at the office. She said, you're hired. Wait. Did I miss something? Interview, maybe? No, just give me a transcript. Give me your medical records, and we're set. So that was easy. At that time, I was also in graduate school, working on my master's. Now, graduate school full-time, working full-time, partying overtime. Work didn't last. School didn't make it. Partying definitely made it for a short time. 1 week before I was fired, it was the worst hangover of my life. I was busted for being high, and I didn't know who to trust. I didn't know, well, I knew I needed to change. And I craved change. I would have died for it, but I didn't know how to ask. And I would mention to the people, and they would say, oh, drink more, smoke more, smoke some more pot. But that's not the answer. And I was searching for an answer. And the worst part is they didn't understand me. So I did what I thought was best. I drank more. I smoked more pot. The day I was fired, I had a case of beer, plenty of marijuana, and I started smoking first. I took a hit. It didn't work anymore. I tossed it. I got a beer. I drank it. I didn't feel it anymore. Nothing works anymore. Luckily, a friend told me to get in touch with somebody for a mental health program for the deaf. So I called the therapist. He said, come on over right now. I said, sure, why not? So I went over there. And I met up with him. I shared about 5 minutes after. And I said, you know what I think? Oh, he said, the therapist said, you know what I think? I said, well, it's your job. Tell me what you're thinking. He said, I think you might have a problem. Duh. Well, I was not happy at all. He said, you may need rehab. There's a program for the deaf that's close by my office here. And so I went and I looked around. I said, oh, that's a nice little program. It's not for me. Do you have a list of any other programs that may fit me? Luckily, they misunderstood me and gave me a list of AA meetings that had interpreters. So after the meeting, I went to my older brother's house. And I explained to them what happened. I told them, well, I got fired and all the other stuff. Now, he has a wife who's a member of another 12-step program. And so she knew about 12-step, and they said, hey, why don't you go? Bring me the list, actually. Bring me the list. He said, and she said, oh, look, there's a meeting tonight. I said, and she said, what's wrong? I said, well, we're eating. What about eating tonight? And she said, no, we'll grab some fast food on the way. And I said, well, we got to make reservations. She said, Michael, come on, we're going. And I was out of ideas. All I could do is just follow, right? Apparently, they think they know something that I don't. So I went to my first AA meeting. And sure enough, there were three people at the meeting that I knew. Wow, the world is full of alcoholics. Honestly, those three people helped me stay in the program. Now, first one relapsed. The first one went crazy. And the third one disappeared. I don't know where the third one is. But I'm very thankful for those three people who have helped me to stay and has saved my life. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. And now remember, I'm from L.A. What do? In L.A., well, you celebrate your anniversary with a cake. So I got my one-year cake. Soon after my one-year cake that I got, I heard somebody say, hey, I stopped drugs. I've been sober from drugs, including poppers. And I said, ooh, I think we may have a problem with my one-year celebration. I called my sponsor. I called him and I said, hey, do you think poppers are considered as a drug? And he asked me, did you feel anything? Oh, yeah. Oh, Jesus. So, I don't remember when the last time I used poppers. And so I set up my sober date as September 1st, 1998. And I'm grateful for being sober since then. It's been an amazing journey. It really has. There's no telling what my life would have been. Well, when I first became sober, I said, oh, this is crazy. Now I'm here. Look, I'm speaking in front of 65,000 people who know my life story. I'll apologize for cussing already. This is fucking awesome. Really is awesome. Really is. Yesterday, today, as I walk around, and I just see all of you and I just think, wow, I could have missed this. My time's running out. I got to speed up. I'm sober, but there was a dark period in my life. And that will also explain my recovery. And it helped me to redefine my recovery. Sometimes, if you're not working the program will work you. Exactly. Program will work you. I was married to my husband. Now, he was sober, I mind you, but he didn't act sober. And it was a concern, and it started affecting me. It was a concern for me, and it started affecting me. And I told him bluntly, I said, you got to change, or I got to change. But I'd like for us to grow together. But if we can't grow together, then I'll have to grow on my own. I've got to grow. I value my sobriety more than anything else. I know that if I stayed with him, I know if I was still with him, I would hurt him. I was considering killing him. I didn't want that, of course. Really, I don't want that. So I left him. We were together for 10 years. 2 days after I left, I said, he said, I can't live without you. I can't live with you without you. You know, all that drama. 2 days later, he had a new boyfriend. The best part with his new boyfriend was my sponsee. Right. I was just a little pissed off. So I changed some things. I changed my relationship, my status on Facebook. Hey, that's important, isn't it? I changed my sponsor. I changed my meetings. Can I say something? My life is getting better. It's a continual process of getting better. It's getting better because when I'm not working the program, like I said, the program works me. I've run out of time, but I wanted to mention this. I'm an alcoholic who is deaf. It was so important for me to stand in front of you and sign. Use sign language. But I also have a problem with word issue and as far as special needs. I'm not special. I'm an alcoholic who is deaf. My issue is what? Accessibility. That's all. If there was no interpreter, I would stand up here and sign, right? Who has a problem now? You have a problem, not me. I like that. Thank you. Exactly. My sponsor wanted me to share this story. And I hate it when people applaud, by the way. I mean, just honestly. As far as the deaf applause, it just looks funny. This morning I was sitting there and I said, wow, 65,000 people applauding. Well, I'm glad I feel funny. I'm sorry, my God has a sense of humor. But let me close with this story. My friend's here. His name is Ellie. You're here somewhere, I know. But when the story is for you, and it says, I love this story, but I haven't told this story for a while, but I want to close with it. And it's for Ellie, wherever she may be. A few weeks before I became sober, I went to the mall. And I would walk around the mall just depressed. I was 110 pounds. My skin was yellow. And I noticed somebody coming. And I didn't want to look at them. And they kept coming. And I didn't want to look at them. And this person I've seen before. I know this person. I know this person. I know I've seen him before, but I couldn't recognize him. Who is that? Did I have an affair with him? Did I have one night with him? Did I do drugs with him? Who is this person? And I couldn't look at him, and then I just finally looked up at them to look and realize the person was me. It was my reflection in the mirror. I couldn't recognize myself. Can you imagine that? I didn't want to look at myself. I wanted to avoid me. Now I can say, I can look in the mirror and I can say, that's Michael. And you look amazing. Thank you. Thank you to all of you that have made that possible for me. Thank you for saving my life. I love you.
Thank you, Michael. Now, please help me welcome our final speaker from Australia, Roy A.
I'm Roy, I'm an alcoholic. Man, what an hard act to follow. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank God for giving me this opportunity to share my experience, strength and hope with you people. This is amazing, absolutely amazing. My home group is the Central Coast Koorie Beginners. It's an hour from Sydney on the East Coast. My sobriety date is the 31st of August 2002. For me, what it used to be like, what happened and what it's like now, I come from a big family, a small community. My mum had 8 kids. I've got 5 sisters and 2 brothers. We grew up very welfare dependent. We were very poor. And I had my first drink at the age of 15. And there's 2 things I remember about that first drink. It was very important for me to remember and never forget. That there was plenty of vomit, there was puke everywhere. And the second thing I remember was just laying on my back and everything was just spinning around. And the more it was spinning around, the more I'd vomit. Even though it made me physically ill to the point that I've thrown up everywhere, I could not wait to back up and do it again. Because growing up with my dad not around and very welfare dependent, I grew up with a low self-esteem. I had no confidence. I felt less than. I thought other people were better than me and I just didn't fit in. But when I had that drink of that booze, everything changed. I heard the Clark Kent scenario where you get this nerdy looking guy who finds a phone box. Then all of a sudden he comes out with these superpowers. And that's what happened to me. Once I found a bottle shop or I got on the booze, all of a sudden I changed. I had these superpowers. I thought I was invincible. I drank rice from my teenage years. If I had a suit on like this when I was drinking, I was in serious trouble. I was going to court. And the charges were bad. So I drank through my teenage years and we call them in Australia and I probably call them right across the world. I done geographicals. I ran. I didn't know what I was running from. And I ended up in Sydney. And this guy, he's not a guy. He was an angel from Alcoholics Anonymous. He knew I was an alcoholic. He was 12-stepping me. And the reason why I call him an angel, and this place is full of angels, because you are doing God's work. And that's what this guy was doing. He was doing God's work. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll be forever grateful for that man. Because he 12-stepped me. And he pestered me and pestered me and pestered me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't even know what the program was about. I didn't even hear about Alcoholics Anonymous. This was about 15, 16 years ago. And I went to my first meeting, and I walked into my first meeting, and I was full of ego. I was in denial, and I seen the word God on the wall. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, here we go. A Christian turnout, Bible in one end, a gun in the other one, they're going to force it down my throat. So it's needless to say I didn't hang around. I didn't get sober from my first meeting. I went back out there, and I didn't need you people to tell me the longer I drank, the worse it would become. I experienced that for myself. And I come back in the rooms on the 31st of August 2002 on the Central Coast of New South Wales. And I was told to sit up the front, take the cotton wool out of my ears and stick it in my mouth. Because the front row is life support, and Roy, we're here to save your life. So at that meeting, I heard an older sober member get up and share. He said, it's a spiritual program based on spiritual principles. It's a loving God of your own understanding. I had no more excuses. And I made plenty of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in the rooms for 8 years and I did nothing about the program. I thought if I put the cork in the bottle, everything will be fine. But there was something missing. And I heard this fellow from Philadelphia come out to Sydney. And he stood in one of the meetings. He said, I'd done everything I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous except 12 things. Hello, I'm a slow learner. 8 years, powder dry. It's not a very good place to be, ladies and gentlemen. I was ready to neck myself or someone else. I ended up in a psychiatric hospital on the northern beaches of Sydney. I've since found out that it cost my private health fund $13,000 for a 3-week intensive support program. It only cost $16.50 for a big book. Oh, man. You do the mass. And so I was going crazy. I went mad, and then I prayed to God. And I said, God, please help me. I need help. Powder dry, ready to neck myself. And God put this lady in my life and in my path. And this lady, I'll be forever grateful. And she's here tonight. And I asked this lady, would she be my sponsor? And she said, Roy, I need to ask you one question. Are you willing to go to any lengths to get sober? She said, don't give me the answer now. You sleep on it and you call me tomorrow. I had a restless sleep. Restless sleep. And I rang her back the next morning and I said, yes. And she said, okay, let's start the work. Come to my place. And she sat me down and the first question she asked me, she said, Roy, how do you know you're an alcoholic? And I said, I drink a lot of booze. She said, so? And I said, I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, so? And I said, well, I don't know. And she said, that's the answer that I was looking for. Well, why don't we find out, shall we? So he goes to the doctor's opinion. Not Roy's opinion. Not her opinion. We go to the doctor's opinion. Then we start reading the book, the doctor's opinion. I find out that the disease isn't in the bottle. The disease centres in my mind. But wait, it gets worse. I have no mental defence against the first drink. Then I find out that my body is just as abnormal as my mind because I have a craving in my body. And when I have that first drink, because I'm obsessing for it, obsessing, when I have that first drink, it hits my lip, it goes down in my body, I get the sense of ease and comfort that comes with the first drink, then I get what the doctor describes as a phenomenon of craving. And I can't stop. My wife, she can have half a glass of wine, bath the kids, wash and wipe up, do the chores around the house, put the pyjamas on the kids, kiss them goodnight and say, love, I'm going to bed. Put a half a glass of wine in me and none of that stuff's happening. I probably won't see the kids for another 3 weeks. What it's like today, it is amazing. I have an amazing life today. This disease took someone who gave me life. My mum was to pass away when I was 10 months sober. We talk about pain in recovery. I buried that lady at 10 months sober. She was 57 years of age. She never had a chance to come into this beautiful program. And I thank God today that I've been given this amazing opportunity to be able to share my experience, strength and hope to the still suffering alcoholic out there. Today I've got a message to carry. Because the book tells me that I can't transmit something I don't have. Because I've seen something in you guys. I said, I want what you have. And you said, well, do what we did. See, it's not important how you get in here. What's important is what you do when you get in here. I also heard it's not about the destination, it's about what happens along the way. I have growth in my sobriety, not when the sun's shining and the birds are singing. I have growth in my sobriety when there's a Category 5 cyclone and things aren't going the way that I want it to go. I found out that I'm very selfish. I'm selfish. I've got self-seeking motives. It's all about me. I try to control, manipulate and dominate people, places and things. And I don't have to do that today. I've got a controller in my life and it's not my wife. It's a loving God of my understanding. See, the book tells me exactly where I can find God. God is deep down within. And if I don't go within, I'm going to go without. And Sydney, Australia, I have to have a shout out to my fellow brothers and sisters from Australia. I just want to shout out to you guys. It's a commitment to spend 23 hours on a plane to get here. But I flew business class. And they give me pajamas, free pajamas. I said, excuse me, love, are they complimentary? She said, yes, they are. I said, well, give me another 5 pairs because I've got a big family. We started our own group on the Central Coast. It is a Koori beginners meeting. It's an Aboriginal meeting for Aboriginal people. The three sides of the triangle: unity, service and recovery. Where am I? I work with sponsees because today I have a solution and not the pollution. And it's all because of this amazing program. And it's because of you people, a loving God of my understanding. I got an email from this lady and said, and you're not going to believe the date that I received the email. It was the 1st of April. Would you like to come and speak at the World's International? I said, are you effing kidding me? Is this some kind of sick April Fool's joke? And the lady came back to me and said, no, this is serious. I went, oh my God. And I'm thinking to myself, because fear will tell me that I'm not good enough to be standing here with you people. Fear will tell me that I don't belong. Fear will tell me that I'm a piece of shit. Because fear is knocking on my door. But guess who's answering the door? Faith. I can't believe I'm standing here with you people tonight. I was sharing with a couple of friends of mine backstage, and I said, if my mum could only see me now. But you see, I know she's with me in spirit. This disease kills people. Today, I experience many, many bouts of being happy, joyous and free. I was restless, irritable and discontented for many, many years. Many years in sobriety. I was in Sydney. I want to share this story with you. And I'm in the boardroom. And this guy's standing up doing a presentation. Death by PowerPoint. And all of a sudden, I reach for my pen with no conscious thought, and I pick my pen up, and it just felt like it started writing. And writing and writing. Then I looked at it, and I don't consider myself to be a poet. And there lay in front of me was a poem, who I believe it was a gift from God and my ancestors. And the reason why I was given that gift is to share it with you people and many people as I can. And it goes like this. If you have a dream, you have a vision. If you have a dream and a vision, make it real, make it a mission. You'll have your ups and your downs, but don't let it knock you around. If you believe it's possible, then fight and tussle to allow it to be colossal. You may have to be bold and mean if you believe in this dream. You may have fear whispering in your ear, but tell it to go away. You're not wanted here. For I found my place in this earth. It is my role to inspire you to challenge your self-worth. So go on your way and move towards your vision. And don't let anyone stop you from achieving your mission. For it is God who will be our final judge. For it is He who holds no grudge. So take the first step, as hard as it may be. It starts today with no more delays. For delays and excuses are for those that are leaners. But that does not include you, because yous are all dreamers. Thank you and God bless.
Thank you, Roy. Thank all of the speakers. For all of those who care to, please stand and join me in saying the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. This concludes our meeting tonight. Enjoy your weekend here in Atlanta, and we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow.